Brendan O'Connor on RTE Radio 1, sponsored by Timber Living Log Cabins. For your perfect workspace, living space or hideaway, timberliving.ie.
Brendan O'Connor on RTE Radio 1.
Now, Boris Johnson said this week it didn't work for him, but the new weight loss drug Ozempic has been hailed as a miracle for others. And I'm joined now by Professor Donal O'Shea, who is HSC Clinical Lead for Obesity. Good morning, Donal.
Morning, Brendan.
Donal, people are, I think, fascinated by Ozempic and there are similar weight loss drugs and injections too. I suppose it's the holy grail in a way. You were there, interestingly, in the early days of Ozempic, weren't you?
Yeah, I mean, when I went over to London to do my research, I joined a group that was working on how the brain controls appetite. And I was given a choice to work on one of three hormones. Now, people are familiar with hormones. Growth hormone makes you grow. Insulin brings your blood sugar down. And hormones can be turned into very useful treatments. That's what has happened with this hormone. It's a hormone you release after you eat a meal. It goes to your brain, tells you you feel a bit full, so it causes a bit of satiety. It goes to your pancreas and makes your pancreas release insulin. So that's why it's a good treatment for diabetes. And it was developed as a treatment for diabetes, and we've been using it as a treatment for diabetes for about 12, 13 years. The weight loss effect took longer to study, and the companies have gradually turned a hormone that has a half-life of 2 minutes in your body into a treatment that will last for a week in the form of injection. So it's incredible progress. It's the first, I'm going to say, safe, effective medical treatment we've had for obesity. We've had other treatments that have had mild effects and bad side effects. This is effective and it's safe. Of course, it has side effects and it needs to be used in the populations that it has been studied in and that there is evidence in. And that's people with diabetes for Ozempic and for people with obesity at that higher dose of the same compound as Ozempic, but it, when it is available to us, it'll be known as Wegovy. That's okay. The other name.
So Wegovy is a higher dose?
A higher dose of the same hormone that your body makes. And hormones are, you know, magnificent forms of treatment.
What does this drug mean to you as a doctor dealing with obesity? Like, is this the holy grail? Like, is this the miracle?
For the last 30 years, we've been saying weight loss. We now know how the body controls weight, and it's 90% irreversible for 90% of people. And I've often asked myself the question, well, why would you go into the field then? We're now at a point where we have, I mean, Ozempic and Wegovy will look weak when we see the treatments that are further down the pipeline.
Yeah. So I gather there's a second wave coming in here now that pharma has barreled into this area, and that there's a second wave that'll be more effective and easier to take and pills and stuff. Is that correct?
They are working on the development of these compounds as tablets. So Ozempic, Wegovy is one hormone. There are trials now of combinations of three hormones that are giving weight loss figures that are equivalent to surgery, which remains the most effective treatment for severe and complex obesity.
Okay. Are we going to eliminate obesity?
I think we are looking at a 20 to 30 year timeline where obesity will become like blood pressure. It will be treatable. And if you treat it and you treat it early, then you will prevent the diabetes, you will prevent the heart disease, you will prevent the cancer. We knew that drug therapy was going to arrive, but within the field of obesity, it's arrived about 10 years earlier than we thought. We thought these discussions were going to be happening and this this kind of hijacking of Ozempic by the Musks and the Johnsons and the Kardashians as a treatment to just make you thin. That's not what this is. This is a treatment for people with diabetes and a treatment for people with obesity.
Okay, but outside of that, there are people, celebrities who are maybe slightly overweight, even people who aren't overweight but want to be kind of even skinnier. Like, it reminds me at the moment, it's become a pop culture phenomenon, almost like Prozac became as a kind of a shortcut happy pill. Does that bother you?
Oh, that bothers me a lot. That's
why?
Because it's, first of all, misuse of a medication, you know, for a reason that it's not indicated for. So you're taking something that there's no evidence it won't cause harm. It's not been studied in that group. It's perpetuating this societal cultural desire for thinness that's out there in the face of an environment that is driving everybody's weight in the opposite direction. So you've got that mismatch. And who would be a teenager today with ads streaming in on TikTok and Snapchat, 4 ads every 10 minutes for high fat, high salt, high sugar foods?
Yeah.
2 hours on TikTok.
And on the other hand, the messages they're getting the other way about thinness.
The influencer's body image, the influencer's preening and pruning to look perfect and unobtainable in terms of appearance, while they're being... And if you spend 2 hours, and the average TikTok user spends 2 hours on TikTok a day, you will have 40 ads for high fat, high salt, high sugar, ultra processed materials.
Okay. So just to go back, so to I think there is a kind of... Ozempic is an interesting philosophical question in a way, right? And okay, for starters, not to frame this in a moral way, but if we have a pill now to avoid putting on weight, is there a danger then that almost nobody bothers to look after themselves and their diet anymore? Like The Economist had a front cover, eat, inject, repeat. So you're decoupling the need to look after yourself with the results.
Yeah, I mean, I remember when the statins came out for cholesterol, they were really good for lowering cholesterol, and people were had their cream cake in one hand and their cholesterol tablet in the other hand, yeah. And they said, you know, I can do this. I think when you finally recognize obesity as a disease and as a chronic relapsing disease, and you have a treatment for it that works well in the setting of a healthy lifestyle where your nutrition is good and your physical activity levels are good, that's where Ozempic works well. So it's a treatment for a disease. So when somebody gets lung cancer, stopping smoking is important. It's not their treatment. When they get skin cancer, putting on their sunscreen and wearing a hat is important. It's not their treatment. But they will do the lifestyle things. And I think people will still do the lifestyle things. What's amazing about this point in the kind of history of obesity is that we have arrived at a point where there are treatments. And the minute you can treat a disease, it truly underlines that it's a disease. So epilepsy was demons and possession until somebody said it's brain activity and this treatment improves it. And then people stopped seizing. And then the exorcisms stopped.
Okay, so treatment is what defines...
almost,
in lots of cases, yeah. But okay, so say you take people who aren't like... I presume a lot of the people you deal with are kind of morbidly obese and everything. There's a lot of people there in the middle ground. And for lots of us, I would say eating, overeating, being overweight... For me, probably an emotional issue, actually. It's not to do with satiety. It's not to do with not knowing when I've had enough to eat. It's an emotional kind of eating. So if I then get Ozempic, so I continue whatever issue I have around food, and I'm taking Ozempic on the other hand, it feels like, are we not dealing with the actual issue?
Well,
do you see what I'm saying? Does that make sense?
It kind of makes sense. So first of all, you said people are morbidly obese. It's have morbid
obesity. Okay, I beg your pardon.
No,
okay.
It's fine. It's something we're all working on.
Okay.
It's people first. You have obesity.
Brand.
You have epilepsy. You have asthma. It's not. To say that that whole eating is an emotional thing. Emotions are genetic. Obesity is incredibly determined by your genes. So as much as your height is determined by your genes. So what this medication does for people with obesity, it allows a reset in their set point. Okay. So your body weight is a set point, and your body always wants to get back to where it was, its peak weight, because energy storage was the way we developed from single cell organisms into two cell organisms that could survive a day, because you could store energy. It's the most primal thing that that we have. It's as important as breathing. So if you lose weight, your body goes into defense. And part of that defense is to make you hungry. Hunger is really closely linked to other primal emotions. And eating helps you to feel better in the moment through that sense of satiety. And that's where this hormone...
And like literally in the moment, for the second you're cramming it into your mouth, basically. Like, I don't think it helps for long afterwards. Like,
It is. I mean, if... So there's a difference. Not everybody has an eating disorder. I think many people have slightly disordered eating.
Comforty eating.
And, comfort eating, it's a good thing, you know. It's not a bad thing.
Okay.
And you certainly shouldn't, you know, judge yourself for a little bit of comfort eating. And you know, we hear about the obesity statistics, but, you know, a lot of people are maintaining their weight week in, week out, month in, month out. The problem
is... But like putting an enormous effort into it, and that gets harder and harder as you get older, and that does require denial in life and requires you not to enjoy life the way you might. And clearly, so, okay, my body, according to your set point theory, wants to get back to a weight that's much, much higher than my current weight. Can I not just get Ozempic then? Can all the people out there who are struggling, who's like, there are people, Donal, as you know, whose lives are a succession of diets, can they all get Ozempic?
Yeah, well, in short, no, because it's obviously an individual case by case basis. But, you know, if you think of hemoglobin, blood donation, you give blood because you know that 8 weeks after you give blood, you can go and give blood again, because your body will have brought your hemoglobin, your blood count, right back up to where it was. And you have a set point for your hemoglobin. Your blood, your and my blood count is different, but your body brings it right back up. You give away weight, you give energy away, and your body will do exactly the same. It'll bring it back up to exactly where it was. I mean, we have people come into our clinic who work hard in our clinic for over a year, and their weight at the start is 166.6 kilos, and at the end of it, 166.6 kilos, to within an ounce. It's nuts.
And they've worked hard on it for a year. Must be so devastating for them, because they're thinking, I know what you think in that situation. You think, I might as well just enjoy my life.
Yeah, no, and the self-loathing, unfortunately, and the self-judging that goes on in individuals living with obesity is really unfortunate. You can be, that individual at the end of a year will be moving better, fitter. Issues around personal hygiene will have improved.
Okay.
We're less and less looking at weight as the metric, because we know what's the point in looking at weight as the metric. Get fitter, eat healthier, be healthier.
I don't feel you've answered my question, though. What about all of us in the middle ground of fighting obesity all our lives? Should we not just all be on Ozempic if this is the miracle and this is the future?
Yeah, so the answer is not yet, for multiple reasons, including availability. I think when blood pressure treatment came out in the 70s and we got good blood pressure treatments, it was for those with severe hypertension.
Yeah.
Now people with blood pressures that are a little bit up are being put on ACE inhibitors and beta blockers and with all the other drugs we have.
Yeah.
It is inevitable that in 20 years' time, obesity will be treated with multiple medications.
And that the people in the moderate range will all, the way people are all on blood pressure tablets and statins now, everyone might be on a little dose of Ozempic.
That is inevitable.
Inevitable. Yeah. And do you disapprove of that? Or
No.
Yeah.
I mean, obesity is a disease. You treat the disease, you prevent the complications of the disease. So I just never thought I would be sitting having this conversation.
Yeah, yeah.
I didn't think we'd get to this point during my career. So I am delighted and excited with where we are.
Extraordinary. So come here, just, and we'll move on now, okay? But going back to your 1990 thing then. So can most of us who have weight on not lose it by dieting or exercise? Is it pointless, like?
Physical activity and healthy nutrition are very important for your general health. Their impact on your weight is about 5% reduction. And that's, you know, not everybody will get a 5% reduction with lifestyle change. There are about 10% of people who can eat less, move more, and will lose weight in a linear fashion. We need to understand that better.
Yeah.
There's about 0.5% of people, maybe less, who eat everything and cannot put on weight. Constitutionally lean group of individuals. That's genetic.
Great most to people are wasting that. Their time, are they?
To say that healthy nutrition and physical activity and keeping an eye on your weight is wasting your time, not true. It's really important we do that, because step one in anybody's weight journey is to stop edging up.
Yeah.
Because the body always wants to go up. And the setup in our supermarkets and with our Uber Eats and Just Eats and Deliveroo is a very consumptive environment. You have to work hard to keep your weight steady.
Yeah. And that's adults. Like, as an adult, I find it difficult to walk into a supermarket and these deals and everything without walking out with some junk. So you alluded to the kids in TikTok earlier. Do the kids now have a hope? Like, are we effectively programming them to be like addicts to ultra processed food and junk and all that?
We're programming. It's the influence on their thinking. It's the shaping of their opinions that concerns me more about TikTok and Snapchat rather than, I think the nutritional kind of promotion on TikTok is entirely high fat, high salt, ultra processed, very targeted to individuals, to the individual's age, to the individual's history of what they're looking at on whatever platform they're on. So they're really targeted to the individual. That's difficult, as you say, as an adult to resist. As a child, as a kid or an adolescent, when your opinions have been formed, when your habits have been formed, it's unregulated, and I'm very concerned about it. I mean, attention span in TikTok users is reduced from 14 seconds to 9 seconds, and that group consider watching a movie to be a slow-paced activity. So the way they're going to consume media in 10 years' time is going to be very different.
Okay. Does willpower come into this? Do we have such a thing as willpower that can...
Well, your weight is not about your willpower.
No.
And it's not about your moral fibre. If you could choose to be thin, we have individuals living with severe and complex obesity. If they could simply choose to be thin, they would choose to be thin. So it's not about willpower. Is personal responsibility important? Absolutely. Is what you have in the house available for eating and drinking important? Absolutely. You have to keep doing the simple things. It's not rocket science. But you have to be aware that the surrounding environment is encouraging you in a different direction.
Okay. You were in here right before COVID, the start of February 2020, you were doing 77 gastric surgeries a year. I believe that situation has improved a lot since.
That has improved. This year we will get to just under 200 between Vincent's and Galway University Hospital. I was down there yesterday and they are fully committed to ramping up to 400 a year over the next 3 years. We'll build up to 400 a year in Vincent's, and a unit in Cork will build up to 400 a year. So we'll be doing 1,200 surgeries a year. The medication will never replace surgery because surgery is a one-stop if you like, intervention that will result in 30% weight loss. And you won't be on lifelong medication. So okay. Surgery remains the most effective treatment.
Not an easy, quick fix for people either, though. Is it like the? It's not like you get your surgery and then you get on with your life.
Oh, sorry. And if I gave that, I did say one stop. Yeah. Absolutely not. There is no quick fix. But surgery, you need to be well prepped for it. And then your management after the surgery and your life after the surgery for the, in particular, 12 to 18 months after the operation, it's very difficult with kind of rapid weight loss, energy deficit that the body doesn't like, your hair falls out, you need to be on vitamins and mineral supplements. So not an easy road, but because it's so effective, we need to build ourselves up to kind of the international developed world norm in terms of access, because we've had dreadful access to obesity treatment up until recently.
Are you still seeing people going to Turkey and these places for gastric surgery? And are you seeing aftermaths of that kind of thing presenting to you guys?
Every acute hospital in the country is admitting people who have gone and had surgery abroad and have had complications. Now, some of the centres abroad are excellent, but some are genuinely cowboy outfits.
What kind of outcomes are you seeing?
One patient who came into the surgical team at Vincent's had a leak where they joined up the stomach to the intestine, and they had a leak because they were trying to save on the number of stitches they used. So they were cutting back on the number of stitches. And that person leaked. Now, that person had their operation done at 10 o'clock on a Sunday night in a warehouse outside the capital of Turkey. You couldn't make it up.
Well, there are a huge amount of texts on this. I'm a GP. Injectable meds are game changers. Wonderful to be able to help patients. As doctors, we've always felt so helpless. I felt such a failure. I haven't been able to help patients much with obesity. The new drugs will save lives. Such an important step forward in public health. That's Dr. J in Dublin. Person here, I've used this medicine for nearly 2 years. My health has improved so much. I feel 20 years younger. I've lived with obesity since I was 10 years old. For people like me, it's a life changer. I now walk without a roller and walking stick. I'm 70. My only regret is it wasn't available to me when I was 20. I mean, sad for that person. I would have lived another life. Thanks to Dr. O'Shea for constantly raising the issue. Person here got the... I've been lucky. A combination of bariatric intervention plus Ozempic has brought my weight from an unlivable 137 kg to an energy-filled 85 kg over 2 years. Without it, I would not have survived. I would have had a miserable existence in the time I had. Now living my best life of the past 30 years, looking forward to a positive future ahead. I possibly did not realise this. People's lives are being changed in extraordinary ways here. Are these people who effectively felt they had a massive disability that left them on the sidelines of having the kind of life everybody else has, and now they're being offered that life?
Yeah, I mean, like, people living with obesity are judged by society and they're judged by themselves. By themselves most harshly, because the narrative out there is just eat less, move more and get on with it, you know, get over it.
So we still have that moral kind of fibre view of things, do we?
Big time. And it's still within the medical profession. It's changing.
Is it?
It is still within the medical profession. You know, amongst, outside of the kind of diabetes and obesity space, there is still a big narrative like that. It's changing, thank God. But
so doctors telling people to cop yourself on, get yourself together. We hear of people, if they wanted an operation or whatever, they're told you need to go away and sort yourself out and you can have that procedure. Yeah, is that still...
Yeah, that is still happening. But it is changing. It's changing rapidly, and when it's interesting to hear a GP, you know, come in and say just what you can do when somebody comes back after their gastric surgery for obesity. There is a smile on their face. They're having a tough time post-operatively, but they're on the way to a better life. So to be able to do that and have treatment that facilitates that, that will change the stigma that that is, was there with, I mentioned epilepsy. You know, that was greatly stigmatized until you could treat it. And then they realized actually it's a disease. We're at that point with obesity.
So there's something Victorian or like medieval about our view of obesity, is there? These are bad, lesser bad people, yeah?
Yes. I mean, let me have men about me that are fat was in Julius Caesar. And because they were in some way inferior to people around who were thin.
Now, Terry here. I was on Ozempic for a year to treat my type 2 diabetes. I began on 0.25 grams, then 0.5 gram, and finally on 1 gram. It really worked for my diabetes. However, I couldn't handle the side effects. They suggested reverting to the lower dose. However, these are no longer available due to cosmetic-driven demand. I'm now off Ozempic. My blood sugar is way up again. Are the side effects pretty harsh?
So this treatment works very well for 30% of people from a weight point of view. And you know after 12 weeks if it's going to work for you. So if you're put on these treatments for weight and they're not working after 12 weeks, then they're not for you, and you'll have to look at maintaining what you're doing and wait for the newer treatments to come.
What kind of discomfort are people having with it?
The main side effects, so I mentioned this is a hormone released by your gut, is where it started, and the main side effects are in the gut. So constipation and nausea and a kind of a sulfur burping kind of rotten egg burps. And if you're on a treatment that's making you feel sick and that doesn't get better, most people the nausea settles. But, you know, nausea, you don't want to live with that. Constipation, if you can't manage it, people are stopping. That's the main reason in the trials that people had to stop these family of medications was constipation.
Okay, so it'll depend on how your body handles it. Can you ask the doctor about Ozempic or Wegovy having a positive effect reducing alcohol cravings, please? Anecdotally, including myself, I found this a positive side effect, as have several friends taking these drugs. Is that something you've come across?
There is some evidence that this hormone and these drugs affect cravings. There isn't strong evidence. But what is fascinating when people have, say, the gastric bypass operation is they will wake up the following day and something they used to like makes them feel sick. Something they used to crave, suddenly they're put off. So
the brain chemistry?
Your brain chemistry changes the day after this operation. And this hormone acts on your brain. So I certainly have seen some people with cravings who start on these medications and the cravings do change.
Just gets better and better. And there's a discussion now about cancer as well in terms of these drugs, isn't there?
Well, there's about 14 or 15 cancers that are strongly linked to obesity. So if
it's a second order effect rather than directly.
You manage obesity, you will have less cancer.
Yeah. Okay. There was one other question. Oh, yeah. OK, so look, this is a big question, right? But can you ask Dermot O'Shea why there was no obesity historically? Not 100% true, but we have, say, as a country, when did we start putting on weight?
So we were the thinnest country in Europe in the 40s. We had been through a famine in the 1800s. So we had a population selected of people who could store energy.
Okay.
And then Burger King and McDonald's arrived in the 70s. You know, that's just
fast food. Okay, we won't blame them specifically.
But it's just the fast food culture arrived in Ireland, bang into O'Connell Street and Grafton Street in the 1970s. And we just took off and went up and up. There will always be obesity. And there will always be a population level. But that was about 6%. 40, 50 years ago in adults, and it's now 24%.
Okay, so the world has changed hugely in recent decades, but I'm getting from you, the world is going to change hugely in the next 10, 20 years as regards all this, is it?
Yeah. The next 10, 20 years are going to be transformative in our ability to treat the disease of obesity and in how we understand and relate to the disease of obesity.
Okay. Professor Donal O'Shea, there was lots of other stuff I wanted to talk to you about, but we were best sticking with all of that. It was fascinating. Okay, Donal O'Shea, thank you. We'll take a break.
Text 51551. Brendan O'Connor on RTE Radio 1.